going to welcome you all to this afternoon's session and introduce our first speaker. This is Mari Sisko Harki.
Yes. Very good.
And my job is now done. You'll see me here with signs.
Can you give her a round of applause to welcome her, please? Make a full up after lunch.
Thank you, everyone. I'll be talking about, this is a case study from Nepal that we've been doing with several languages. In 1998, Himelman wrote a famous article where he made a distinction between descriptive and documentary linguistics. And in a, I would say, the purest form of documentary linguistics, you are not allowed to analyze anything. You just record, you collect, you label things. But as Himelman says, it's even when you start to transcribe, you are analyzing already. You're making decisions. So we have done these projects, which is very much on the documentary side. But I want to introduce the bold method here. And in transcription, or any of you who have done any documentation or any language data collection, you will know that transcription of audio recordings is really a bottleneck in our work. So Woodbury in 2003 mentioned this re-speaking method, that anything that is recorded would be re-spoken in a clear voice. And he also mentions phrase-level oral translations. And then Gary Simons in 2008, he introduced this term BOLD, Basic Oral Language Documentation. And then in 2011, SIL worked on a software called Say More that would facilitate anyone who wants to use this basic oral language documentation. So in short, basic oral language documentation, you take your recording, your story, let's say, and you piece it into manageable chunks, normally a phrase-level utterance, and then that phrase will be re-spoken in a very clear voice. You know, when we speak, when we tell a story, we might go very, very fast, but in the re-speaking, the idea is that very clear pronunciation, and even if you break after each word, it makes it very specific even to what could be distinguished as a word. And also in the same way, all of those phrases would be translated more or less on the spot, so it's not a word-by-word translation, but it would be more like a phrase-level translation. So this is what BOLD is. I have a lot of references where BOLD is described more in detail, so you can look at those later. I'm also not introducing the Say More software, but as I said, I want to talk about case study, how we took, the last point here, how we took four nationals without Nepali nationals without any linguistic training before, and we taught them how to use this software and how to use the BOLD method in Nepal, and it has been extremely successful, I should say. So I'm also demonstrating here, Seymour's slogan is language documentation productivity, how to make language documentation very productive or very smooth process. So how productive can we really get with BOLD and Seymour? So this is what I'm talking about this afternoon. So far what we have achieved, this is, I think we started in 2014, so we haven't really been working on this that many years, but so far we've been able to record 14 different languages. Three of them are very, very almost extinct languages. Two of them have less than 10 speakers. So we have been doing recordings and the oral transcriptions and the translations. So remember, no analysis, just basic documentary linguistics. For the larger language groups, we have been doing approximately something between 10 and 17, even up to 17 hours of recordings. We try to aim to do many speakers. So for each of these languages, we have recorded 70 to 100 speakers. So it's a large amount. Depending on the number of technicians and the mother tongue facilitators who work together with our technicians, it normally takes about 7 to 10 weeks to complete one project in one language. So I would say that's pretty productive with that amount of people. So how does it all work? So we have trained four nationals who we call technicians, because they are the recordists, they are the one who run the machines, so we felt technician would be appropriate word. We normally connect with 2 to 4 mother tongue facilitators, so you could also say local guides, so those are the people who take our technicians to different places. I'll talk a little bit later about their role more specifically. All the original recordings are done in the language area, so this team of normally 2 technicians would go with these mother tongue facilitators, not all 4 technicians. So all this small group goes to the language area, does the recordings there, then they come back to the capital city, and this re-speaking, the oral transcription and the oral translation, they are done back in capital city. So how did we select the technicians? Remember, they are not linguists by training. So I'm working with SIL International in Nepal, and we partner with a local NGO called Mother Tongue Center Nepal. So these technicians are really hired by the NGO. We wanted to have young people, mainly unmarried, so that they would be free to travel around the country, because the travel is fairly frequent. We wanted them to be from an ethnic background. It's quite obvious in Nepal, if you see someone's face, you can say, is that from an ethnic minority group, or is that from the main cultural Nepal ethnicity? So we wanted that the people who we record would have easy time to see that, oh yes, these people are like me, even if they aren't from my language group. So that was quite important for us. We wanted those people, have the technicians, to have some computer knowledge, that we didn't have to start from the beginning. So they all have had quite a bit of computer experience. We wanted them to have interest to work in a technical field, meaning audio and video recordings, but we didn't require any previous experience with audio recordings, for example. So how did we train the technicians? The actual training before they went to the first field assignment was only for about a month. So first thing, of course, we had to explain to them, why do we want to do this? Why do we want to record, document these languages? So that was like I think it was fairly easy for all of them to understand why. I think 3 of them were mother tongue speakers of a minority language, so they could really relate to that well. But we had to go to quite a detail. They were young guys, you know, so we had to even teach them how to introduce yourself when you go to a village, how to represent our organization well, what are you allowed to do and what are you not allowed to do. So it was very, very basic, kind of like training these younger brothers who you are sending out to the to the world. Of course, we trained about informed consent. We talked about what is informed, what does it really mean to be informed, and what is a consent. We translated that into Nepali so that it was very simple but still had all the required information. We have been doing all the informed consents by recording, by talking and recording. Signing papers in Nepal is that you don't know if you're signing your life away, so we wanted to do it in recording. We taught them about recording skills. What does it mean to have a high quality recordings? Basic things about, you know, what we want to record in WAV, and we don't want to lose any information there. A big thing was techniques, how to record in a village setting. What is a good place in the village to record? How to avoid, you know, the typical village noises? And also taking care of the equipment was quite important because they do several trips. So all of these pieces were quite significant. Metadata was probably the hardest one. How to label collected data consistently. So we spent quite a lot of time with that. And then we went on to what do we want to collect? Different genres, different, I'm talking a little bit later, a little bit more about genres. Different kinds of people, we wanted to emphasize to them, we want to record young, old men, women, educated, uneducated, from different dialect areas, if possible. And our goal was to record approximately 10 hours per language. That was our goal, and as I said, you know, some of our guys just went off and did 17 hours, so almost the double what we were doing. In fact, when I'm looking back now, what has surprised me is that we spent very little time training them on Say More. I would like to ask, how many of you have heard of Say More? Okay, almost everyone. And how many of you have used or even just played around with it? Okay, so you have some kind of idea that it is fairly basic. You don't need too much. So if someone tells you what are the different steps, it really doesn't take, the learning curve isn't that steep for that. And we didn't really teach BOLD as such because BOLD kind of comes together with the Say More program. Unfortunately, in this presentation, I don't have more time to go too much into the details of BOLD. Yes, thank you. So how do we go about this? Normally, a language community approaches either SIL or our NGO partner, and we make a plan how to do the language documentation, when, where, what are the areas that they would like us to visit. Then we ask them to select 2 to 4 mother tongue facilitators. Again, some requirements that we have for them is that they would need to commit for 2 months full time because the process takes that much. They have to be willing to travel. They need to be computer literate, not very high. We've had some people who do very slow typing, but so that they aren't totally new to computers. Very important that they know their language well, because they are the ones who are doing the re-speaking and the phrase-by-phrase translation. And also good relations in the community. So on an average, 2 technicians and 3 mother tongue facilitators, it would take about 7 to 10 weeks to complete a project with approximately 10 hours of recordings, re-spoken and orally translated. Also, actually, I should say that they also type it into Devanagari. Even if they don't have the orthography fixed, they still make their best effort to type it in. We're very fortunate that Devanagari is very phonemic for Nepali language, so their typings can be very phonemic. Of course, we don't get those sounds that are different from Nepali language, but we still get pretty good phonemic typings into Devanagari, and thanks to Flex and a converter program there, we can just, by a press of a button, we can turn it into IPA from Devanagari, so that's a bonus for us. So a typical plan is that, first of all, these mother tongue facilitators, remember 2 to 4 people, they come, or our technicians meet with them, they go over the process, what are we doing, how do we do it in 1 to 2 days. Then 5 to 7 days preparation means that these mother tongue facilitators go to their own local areas. They visit people, they talk to people about what is going to happen, what is language documentation, who would be willing to tell their story, who would be willing to participate. So that's the preparation. Then our technicians go to the language area, 10 to 15 days. I know that they've done some in much quicker time, but you know, it's how well people are lined up. If people are really willing and lined up, you can do that almost in a half of that time. Then again, the technicians come back to Kathmandu. They prepare the data. They kind of label it well and upload it to a computer. They do that kind of preparation for approximately seven, again, working days. These are working days. And then the mother tongue facilitators come to Kathmandu, and it will take both the facilitators and the technicians about 15 to 20 days to process those 10 hours of original recordings, re-spoken and mostly also typed. And then a very important step is distributing the recordings and also photos, because we take a photo of each speaker. People love to have their photos, you know, back to them. We normally distribute with small SD cards that would go to their smartphones. We were thinking of maybe CDs, but hardly anyone uses, you know, CD players anymore. So phones, or even shared on the phones, is a good way to give it back to people. We archive. Unfortunately, so far, we've been only doing archives into our SIL, internal archive, no outside archive. But then in quite a couple of languages, they've also created a website where it's particular to one language group. So any person from that language group can go to their own website, listen to the stories, songs, poems, whatever was recorded. So that's not an archive, but it's a way for the language people to access the materials. Our goal has been 10 hours original recordings. We've tried to go as many people as possible. Genres have been, we give the technicians a handout where each genre is, in very brief way, explained, and then that's translated into Nepali. So the technicians know it, and they explain it to the mother tongue facilitators that they have an idea what to look for. We don't do word lists or semantic domains, because in most of these languages, we've gone on with a glossary project afterwards, so we would get a lot of individual words there. It would probably be good to get some basic sentences where different grammatical structures would be available, if we had a, you know, fixed list that we could just go through. Key factors to the success that in my opinion are important. I think it's really important to take enough time to train these national technicians, because they are the key people. Actually, I have to say, I haven't gone to a single field recording with them. My husband went once, he's a Nepali, and you know, he checked with their how do they do in the village, but I haven't been there. So it's important that they are trained well. Motivation among the language community is very important, especially for the mother tongue facilitators. I believe strongly about going local. All the recordings are, of course, done in the village setting, but also that we have no white faces going to do the recordings. It's all Nepalese. But also that the Nepali technician, he is of course an outsider, but we still use the mother tongue facilitators. So if someone is telling a story, I'm, as a mother tongue facilitator, I'm the listener. So there is some insider in the room. And we believe that it's really important to give back to the community. Photos, the recordings, giving back to them. Challenges, quality control, you know, getting people into the, yes, you have to write everything about the metadata, you have to label things well, you have to be consistent. Trained technicians may leave. We first trained four, two of them have left, two of them are still with us. The genres are very difficult to define. We use the normal genre list. Some of them are very specific. It's quite hard for them to see that, you know, is it this genre or is it this genre? That's a challenge. Publishing the recordings in a written format is a challenge, because these are oral, or so far have been unwritten languages, and their way of doing their oral stories, when they start to write it out, they realize, even if it's an unwritten language, they say, this doesn't sound fine when it's written. It's fine when we speak it, but it's not, they see that a written language should be different. Further challenges, maybe in a mother tongue group, there may not be enough computer literate people. Like, so far this hasn't been a problem with us in Nepal. We don't do a word by word translation, which, so if someone wants to do linguistic analysis on this very basic documentary data, there's a big step ahead of someone who takes on this. And also because all of our translations are into Nepali, so for an outside linguist, if they don't know a Nepali, it's a big problem. Different archives are getting more restricted where we could upload this. So we first approached ELAR, and I think they said, you know, sorry, you have to pay. And we weren't able to do that. Funding, we haven't really been able to receive any funding outside the, you know, SIL's own, but we would be able to do so much more if we had, you know, better funding. I believe we could go for the word-by-word translations as well if we had more funding. And one more slide. We, as I mentioned at the beginning, we did three almost extinct languages. Like, two of them have less than 10 speakers. One of them has only one speaker, actually, who can, yeah, still remember some words. It's really hard to get stories. They don't use it actively anymore. Even to ask one person to tell a story, they start a little bit, and that's it. They can't produce a story in their language anymore. So for those ones, we've gone to words, single sentences, just whatever we can get. What we've also realized, it hasn't been easier to get funding for almost totally extinct languages. But we did with these languages whatever we could. And also what I've personally found a huge challenge is, especially with these small languages, they ask us to revitalize. Please help us. But we are almost like, we are not specialized in that. And again, what to answer them? That's personally a big challenge for myself. Okay, and references will be here and then available for later. But that was my time. Right, yes. Re-speaking or oral transcription is that first we record the natural story, and then in Kathmandu, using the Seymour program, there are features that you have to chop the story into phrases, kind of segments, more manageable than, you know, manageable chunks. And then a mother tongue speaker will listen to the original and then re-speak every word very clearly. Something like that. Same old program really helps in that process. Yes?
So just to add on to that question, is the intention then with the re-speaking to capture the individual items of vocabulary or natural phrase boundaries, or
its intonation is going to be all over the place. You know, that shouldn't be used for any research on intonation. I think what we are getting is more precise pronunciation
of
individual words.
Right.
Yeah. I think even, you know, tonal research or anything shouldn't be done on the re-spoken. So only to get a clearer...
it facilitates the written transcription after the oral transcription.
Yeah, we have a specialist here in the house, Brenda Borger. Yes. Any other questions? Yes.
Is the written transcription also done by the mother tongue speakers? Or?
Yes. And again, as I said, you know, they don't have, in quite a few of these languages, we did work, if the language community wanted to work on their orthography, develop an orthography for them, we did that afterwards. but they would just do their best to write their language using the local script.
Once the process is completed, in what format is the result?
Once you've finished
the re-speaking and the spelling, the transcription, then how do you store it?
Yes, actually in Say More, they are working on a function. I'm not sure if it's there yet, but they are working on a one button kind of wrap it all together, and so that it's ready to be archived as one. So it has, we have all of the recordings and the re-speaking. They are all in a WAV format here. But then anything that it's here typed in, you have an export option, and you can export into ELAN file or Flex, interlinear, or subtitles even. So you can, for the written ones, you can choose whatever you want to do. Yes, good question. There's a people tab here. And so these are all the personal things. And so here it's, you would just upload, I think this audio is someone's consent. So this one here, it actually shows that we don't have consents for these people. But so there is a special place here. And also what I really like is that we can have all of their photos here as well. So. And there, you know, there a lot of their background information goes into.
Do you have any problems with collaborating with people working on the same project using Say More? Because obviously it's an installed piece of software and it doesn't have a common data model. Is it just a case of splitting up the work into atomic units for different people to work on?
In our own project with several people, we asked them to use. We put everything into one project. I'm sorry, we have so many. Yeah. Anyway, here. So this one is one of the technicians, and his initials are BA, and then we just have a running number on the.
How did you do that? How did you end up with one project with lots of different signals contributing into it?
Can you ask that again?
How did you have this one large signal collection that has these different contributors into it, each of which would have been using their own Say More, presumably?
Yes. Actually, I'm not sure if they put everything together only at the very end, so that whenever they start to work on their computer, they would, like up there is AY, so that's another technician. So every ID is, we can specify who was the technician, which number was it from theirs, and then at the very end, I think we just put them together into one big thing, and then it's for archiving it all together. Yes?
So you said that with more funding, you could also do word-by-word analysis, right? Now that perhaps would not necessarily be easier for the native speakers than for perhaps linguists or something, so it could always be a further step, as well as honing the transcription that you have that was based on Devanagari, right?
Yeah.
You can, you do have the audio, and then you do have that rough transcription,
yeah.
And then someone could always go back to listening to that. And that's
yeah, absolutely. We would really want the native speakers to be the ones who would do the word by word, but because we pay all the people that participate here as the mother tongue facilitators. We don't pay for the individual speakers. People are normally totally happy to give their one story, two stories, without any payment. But we do pay those mother tongue speakers, two, three, or four of them, because they have to give full 2 months of time. So even another 2 months of time that we would have to pay. So that's, yeah, that kind of comes to a funding issue anyway.
Do you pay them by time they invest, or by, I don't know?
by time, yeah. Kind of an average monthly, a good monthly salary in Nepal. They normally work really hard. That hasn't been a problem that they would slack up, so, yeah.
Any last questions?
you very much, Rob.